Welcome to Jeremy Agresti, the founder of Triple Bar, a company redefining how we think about the future of food and biotechnology. It sits at the intersection of artificial intelligence and alternative proteins with a mission to accelerate the development of sustainable food systems with the power of AI. Jeremy's solution has revolutionized traditional R&D methods, using AI-driven computational biology to predict, design, and optimize microbial strains and proteins. The technology integrates machine learning algorithms with biological data to stimulate and test thousands of iterations in silico, effectively creating a virtual lab. I'm Alex Crisp, and welcome to another episode of Future Foods Interviews. Episodes are available on all podcast channels and also on Substack and YouTube, where you can subscribe for free. Okay, so thank you, Jeremy, for agreeing to come on to the Future of Foods interviews. Jeremy, you are the founder and CTO of a company called Triple Bar, which is based out in the USA. And you're working with AI in the food space and also in the medicine space. So I was wondering whether you could just sort of spend a couple of minutes introducing yourself and kind of describing Triple Bar's mission. Yes.
Sure. So thanks for inviting me here. I'm happy to be here with you. I'm a scientist. My background really originally as a biologist, but throughout my career, I've kind of drifted toward the interface of engineering and biology. And so I've been developing these ideas around how to increase basically the amount of data we can collect in biological systems for my entire career. And in the same way that if you think about how we increase the amount of computational data we could process, we miniaturized, right? We went from kind of vacuum tube computers to transistors to microchips. The same concept applies in biology. So my career has been about miniaturizing from kind of test tubes down to microchips to enable us to process more information on the biological side. And I founded Triple Bar with the idea of using that large amount of data that we can collect to engineer biology in a more effective way. I think that biology has this potential to create molecules that we as humans need to both heal ourselves, but also feed ourselves. As the population grows, Triple Bar's mission really is to enable us to live on this planet in a way that's sustainable by providing for, the growing population. And I think biology has the unique ability to create the kind of molecules and kind of products we need to live. And if you think about it, that's, most of what we consume now, whether it's, building materials made of wood to like the things we eat, or the drugs we take, they're often biological things. What we need is more efficient ways to make them and more efficient ways to discover them. And wow. And so Triple Bar's mission is really to enable that.
So, I mean, I imagine that there is quite a significant sharing and use of data in this field already. What are you offering that companies before you haven't?
I think that there is a lot of publicly available biological data, and I think that what the scale of that data is actually much smaller than other types of data that are available. We're all aware of this kind of AI revolution that has come about, where we that's kind of either changing or about to change the way we do a lot of things with language and images, and that's based on this huge amount of data that's available, on the internet, basically. There's this like huge amount of data. That's not really true for biology. So even though there are kind of what we consider now large biological data sets, they're quite a bit smaller than actual language, right? And so they're not really often large enough to for large language models to use to make predictions. And then more specifically, they're not specific to certain problems, or they're not specific enough to the types of problems we need to solve. So what triple bar really what we can do with data is we can create enormous data sets because of this miniaturization and speed that we've developed, this tech core technology we've developed. We can create more data than is currently available, and really tune that data collection to specific problems at a scale that's, thousands or in some cases millions of times faster than you can with traditional methods. And so what might take a traditional company that is using the way that we automate data collection in biology traditionally is with robotics. We use kind of robots to act like scientists and move test tubes around the lab. What might take a traditional company, decades and billions of dollars to produce this large amount of data, we can do in a matter of days with our miniaturization technology. And so it's a real step change in the amount of data that can be collected. And because we can do that in a kind of bespoke way for a particular problem, it's the right kind of data to solve those problems. And so, we think it's really the missing piece for how to apply these tools of AI to biology is the large specific data sets.
Okay, so I need to try and imagine now what the technology looks like. You talk about kind of miniaturization technology, so it's not like a shrinking machine, is it?
Right.
It's and so what is it? What does the technology look like? What are you at, if you're going into somebody's business, what are you actually installing for them? What are you using?
Right. So with the way we actually kind of we don't sell a piece of hardware, but we actually partner with companies that want to make or discover new products, and we kind of take their problem in house, and we have a proprietary system that we've developed, and we call it hyper throughput screening. Where we basically take the kinds of things you would do in a test tube that you could hold in your hand, and we miniaturize that by something like a million fold in volume, down to where it's essentially tiny droplets of water moving around on a microchip. And so all the things you could do in a test tube still happen. So we can grow cells, say, inside of those microvolumes. We can measure what they do, and we can make decisions on whether or not to add certain testing chemicals or any sort of measurements that we do, and then pick the things out that are better. But essentially, we've kind of reduced the laboratory to a chip. And then the way we work with other companies is we kind of create an organism, and then we're able to often license that organism back to the partner, so they can use it to make the products that they want to make.
Okay, and so the tests are still happening, but they are happening on a chip. It's not like you have kind of taken the results of tests that have happened before, and so you are just sort of dealing with data, or are you actually kind of using real liquids and real
Yeah. So let me make that clear. Yeah. So what we do is miniaturize the liquid, like the kind of dirty, sticky goop of biology. We actually miniaturize that. And from there, because we can do so many biological tests, like the real wet lab biological tests, then we convert that into data. So we gather data from the performance. Say we want to look at how to improve performance out of a microbe producing a product. We were able to look at billions of changes across that microbial genome to understand which changes have which effect on that process, right? And so that's done in the lab, which then we are able to convert to data so that in the future you can make better predictions about without having to go to the lab for what are the changes that need to be made to an organism to improve production, or to make, what are the changes you need to make in an organism, or sorry, in a say a T cell, so that it's better able to attack a cancer, a tumor, those kinds of things.
Okay. I think I understand that now. I mean, I don't have a science background. My background is in law and journalism, so I have to ask these questions in order to process it. So clearly, I mean, I understand why you've chosen the fields you have. You say that it's the application is going to be in kind of food fermentation and precision fermentation and medicine. So what
That's right.
specific aspects of these areas are you going to be assisting?
Right. Yeah. So on the food side, we work in a few different areas. I think a missing piece, and it's been a long thought dream for biotechnology, that we could supplement some of the foods that we currently eat that are the kind of most nutritious and bioavailable and important foods, supplement traditional animal agriculture with biotechnology. To the way I think of it, is sort of upcycling sugar into like high value nutritionally and high value monetarily products. And the problem is that the way our understanding of biology has been poor enough that it's hard for us to design a biological system. And so what oftentimes happens is companies start and they have this idea that they're going to, say, replace a certain milk protein with a biotechnology produced version of that protein, and it. Each company forms with the same, protein one company, protein two company, and they all basically try to solve the same problem, which is how do you program an organism to make that protein? And it often costs, hundreds of millions of dollars to get to do that, if they get there at all. And it means that all these kind of basically startup companies are trying to be food companies. And my thought about this when I started the company was like, what if we could operate like more mature industries where you have different levels of the supply chain, where the startup company isn't trying to go from kind of the discovery of a new thing to like putting a product on the shelves, but we can be a supplier, in the same way that Goodyear Tires doesn't have to make cars, right? Like they're suppliers that bring pieces of a product to market. And the reason why that hasn't happened in biotech is because it costs so much money to do that, and because we don't understand the systems well enough. And so what we wanted to do at Triple Bar was operate. We thought if we could solve the main problem, which is like our ability to engineer these systems, that we could operate biotech, in particularly food biotech, more like a mature industry. And kind of, if you think of like horizontalizing that, so that there are different strata instead of one company trying to bring something from beginning to end. And so we see that across the spectrum of foods. So we have several partners we're working with, especially in the dairy space. Those are some of the proteins that are common to commonly consumed by people, or eaten by people, and there's known limitations in how much land we can really dedicate toward traditional dairy. And so if we can kind of make those same proteins, but just do it in a different way, then we as humans get access to those things at a cost and a supply scale that could be really transformative to our life here, right? And so we're working on a lot of those kinds of things in the food space. We also, in the same way that we work on those specific proteins, we also are working in the cultivated meat space as well. So the rather than just like individual proteins, what about these kind of the tissue itself, the meat that we eat? If we could produce that in a way that was more sustainable, then people who could supplement some of the meat they eat with these kinds of products. And the problem
Oh.
with that is it's just really complicated. Like, I don't think science really knows not just us or anyone in particular. No one really knows how to get a cell that was growing happily in a cow to grow in a large factory at well enough to kind of produce food out of it in any sort of cost-effective way. And so our approach is one where we don't have to know ahead of time how to design that cell line. We can sort of discover it by its ability to grow into under those conditions. And so and we do that by just basically like putting a lot of by testing a lot of variants or a lot of changes in that organism. In this case, it's not a full organism. It's a cell out of that organism. And so we've shown that we can actually, without really understanding ahead of time, like why a cow cell would like to grow to high density in a fermenter tank, we've shown that we can find cell lines that do, and then we can learn after the fact how that problem is solved. And so that's why we talk a lot about evolution at our company, is because the process that we use to get to that point is an evolutionary process.
So, are you looking that perhaps your technology will become part of a bioreactor, or would that be a separate stage?
Yeah, so we work that what we do is we use our platform to test millions of variants of a molecule or an organism for their ability to, say, grow in a bioreactor, right? So we find the best things that we find the things that grow the best in under the limitations of a bioreactor. And so we actually engineer the organism to work well in a bioreactor. So we don't necessarily attach our technology to a bioreactor directly, but it's kind of indirectly attached in the way that we miniaturize those conditions.
Okay, so what stage is Triple Bar at the moment? Are you a startup, or are you further along than that? What sort of funding have you received so far?
We're a startup. We do have revenue. We do have partnerships and revenue. We've kind of proven the basics of our platform and applied it in a bunch of different ways. And we have several partnerships that are kind of ongoing in the food space. We are we've our funding so far has all been mainly been through venture capital so far. And one of the kind of next things that we're doing here is, like, as we've kind of developed this evolutionary design strategy, where we're kind of using our miniaturized assays to kind of find the best organisms or the best molecules, we've realized that there's this opportunity to collect more data out of those things we're doing. And so we think that data can now be used to create now computer models that can feed back into the to our system. And so that our next frontier is to basically con you know d convert this real wet lab testing we're doing into a computer model that we can use to engineer organisms better.
Right. So you say you've got a few collaborations. Are you collaborating with any of the well-known companies? Are you able to mention anybody?
I think the public partner that we've talked about is a company called Friesland Campina Ingredients. They're a dairy company in the Netherlands, and they're one of the largest suppliers of dairy ingredients. So they are producing traditional dairy products, milk and cheese and yogurt and things like that. But then they also have an ingredients business where they take milk and break it apart and sell proteins and sugars and other parts of it. And so that's the part of the business we work with. So to
Okay.
identify these proteins that are either rare or expensive in, say, cow's milk, but are very, very beneficial for humans to eat, and find a better source of them. And uh the it I would say it's a maybe a more scalable source. So there's only so much land you can use for cattle, and so much nitrogen you can put on the soil. But by using fermentation to supplement that supply, you make those proteins more accessible to infant nutrition, adult nutrition. There are a bunch of different areas that they
Okay.
can go to.
And there are some companies out in Europe, and I think also in the States and in India as well. I think also that are making cultivated, well, sort of cell cultivated milk. So, I mean, are you in contact with these companies?
Yeah, we're aware of those companies. That yeah, there are companies that I think what you're talking about are companies that are well, there's two different flavors of that. So there's companies that are taking mammary cells actually, and that naturally make milk, and they're cultivating those, and they're extracting like more or less whole milk from that process. We're not working on that. But we are working on other dairy proteins that are components of milk. And the proteins that we work on would be parts of a kind of an alternate the produce milk. And those what's neat about that compared to there's obviously like a large alternative milk industry that already exists between soy and oat and any number of other plant-based materials. These are what we work on are the real kind of the actual proteins that are found in milk. And so the it's like the identical protein. And so the milk is milk. It's just instead of produced by a cow mammary gland, it's produced by a yeast being, brewed in a tank.
So clearly you haven't struggled getting funding. I suppose kind of AI is hot stuff at the moment. So there's a combination because the kind of novel food alternative protein space perhaps hit a bubble a couple of years ago, which has kind of subsequently kind of deflated slightly, but sort of AI is doing well. So it's kind of a perfect little sort of straggling you're doing of the two industries, and so funding hasn't been a problem, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, it depends what you consider a problem. We've managed to get funding both from kind of partnerships that we've signed, because I think we offer something, that a product that people are interested in. And on the venture side, we've had some great investors that have kind of been some with us since the start and continue to be, and other more recent ones. But I think of AI, the AI component of it is really it's a tool that can be used across different things. So I would say that we're still in the food and kind of biological products field, regardless of whether we're using AI or not, right? Like it's an important it's something that can potentially really unlock a lot of progress in the space. And so we're, we, like I said, we think that what's missing really are these data sets. And it's probably what's missing is not really the algorithm side. I think that there's a lot of the kind of models and algorithm are kind of well understood from natural language, from actual, human language. And those are applicable to the biological side. It's what's missing is the right data. And so we're, we think that that's what we bring to it, and I think that a lot of investors understand that. I think there's a thought. It's certainly we've in the investors we've spoken to, there's a understanding that the kind of model and kind of algorithm side is kind of a race to the bottom in terms of commoditizing it, and what's really needed are data. So
So clear. So what are going to be some of the big problems, the big hurdles that you'd face bringing your technology to market?
I think it I think it's the things we have to do are operate on a larger scale than we have. The you know one what you know we collect these large data sets, but it's usually on a kind of not very many products at once. And I think the ultimate like the highest quality data set will be able to kind of have the same process modeled across any number of products, so that the model understands the differences between making, you know, one protein or another, or one say the a one type of drug or versus another. And so I think that, you know, the one of the biggest things that we need to do to really kind of realize the full vision here is that is the scale.
Okay.
And so it's just operating more things in parallel. And so the you know the, some of that is a some of that is a is a is a kind of a funding challenge just to have that many things operating. And then it's just, you know, finding, you know, growing the team and finding the right people to kind of to do that is you know is never easy.
Are there any legal or sort of ethical hurdles or considerations, I suppose, rather than hurdles that are being.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say it's always on our mind, right? And I think that, to be honest, I think that these tools are, you know, and the kinds of things we do are not that, not as far removed from like what we've been doing in our domestication of animals and plants for thousands of years. And so although we might be accelerating the process and we might be bringing together ideas that would be hard for you know our understanding as human learn if in human learning to kind of put those things together, I don't think that it's fundamentally different. So I don't think there's like an inherent like there's an inherent danger in what we do specifically. Now it, you know, in the future, if design gets to the point where you can really kind of predict any product that comes out of, if you have a model of the kind of a of life that can you can predict any product, then of course there are dangers to that with, you know, bad characters having access to that and making dangerous things. You know, I think we're pretty far from that, and you know, I'm expecting that as we kind of move along, that they'll we can put safeguards in place to prevent that. I think that the advantages just so outweigh the risks here. You know, the ability to kind of you know to use a model to predict, you know, exactly the right treatment for a particular patient's cancer. You know, the ability to engineer an organism that can make, you know, bioavailable and nutritious food available to anyone, you know, it's worth the effort to look into that and to try to achieve that goal. And so, like anything, there's a backside to that. There's a dark side to that, but it's, you know, I think we're, the benefits will come faster than those risks.
I suppose the dark side is kind of biological warfare, kind of bioengineering for evil ends, you know, kind of creating, you know, living things, I suppose, right? Which, yeah, you know, kind of bio, yeah.
I mean, certainly could be in the future, like, and I, but I actually think that, you know, that knowledge exists now, right? Like the like the like that ri the risk is maybe only slightly increased with having access to like a predictive model for biology to make dangerous things. You don't need to be able to make new dangerous things with biology, right? Like we already know a bunch of bad things you can make with biology, and the knowledge is available already, right? I think that what we don't know how to make is a specific molecule that targets, you know, diseases that we don't yet have cures for. We don't know how to do that. We don't know what that molecule is, but we do know what anthrax toxin is, right? And so that's already available. And I don't, you know, it hasn't, it's not that there have been zero events of these kinds of things, but it's like we already have safeguards in place to fight these things. And I don't think that AI is going to drastically change that availability.
No, I suppose it's inevitable that it will be applied in this way at some point. So I kind of wonder what wider consumers would kind of make of this kind of technology if they knew about it. What do you think the man on the street would say?
I mean, I think like anything that we don't understand well, like there's a natural, it's the natural tendency to be skeptical, right? And I think people, that's fine that people are skeptical. I think that if I but I think it's a matter of somewhat education and somewhat getting used to the to new things. I think that if we had been eating the kind of ancient variety of corn until tomorrow, and all of a sudden like the modern variety showed up on our plates, we would be shocked and wondering, it would look like this monster of an organism. I don't know if you've seen like what the kind of historical strains of these grains looked like, but it's nothing like what we do today. And it's only because, and what we applied to that was technology, right? It was breeding over and selection over thousands of years. And I think that, and it's and because we're used to it, and because we have a history of safety with it, we're not worried about it. But that, and I think that's true with any new thing, right? So, what we there are certainly academic groups that study like the kind of psychology and the kind of sociology of like how like you said, the average man in the street, or the average person who doesn't understand what's going on under the hood of the technology, like that will react to these things. And we're involved, we're involved with a center at UCLA, for example, that studies these kinds of things. And so like we're very kind of tuned into this idea of like that you have to there has to be a there might be an environmental need or a that but people actually have to be accepting of it to for it to really be something that makes a difference.
The whole alternative protein and cultivated meat space, it kind of faces some major obstacles, especially in regards to scaling up, growth media, kind of cell lines, and all of the parts of the process that have perhaps caused the bubble to kind of deflate slightly. So do you think your technology is going to assist this? Do you think as if people use your technology, it could help in any of these problems?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like I think it already has, and we've had a few different partners on in the cultivated meat space that work on the kind of scale up side and making products. We work with them to develop the base cell lines that they would use, and I think a big part of why the industry has been slower than folks had hoped when they started is that the science just hasn't really had the rational tools, the knowledge to be able to engineer these cell lines, and so that's the particular problem that we solve, is like how do you actually engineer a cell line that can grow in a tank, can grow quickly, can grow with the immediate, the cheap, and kind of and easily attainable ingredients that need to be there. And we just don't, as a scientific community, don't know how to engineer that from first principles. And so using an evolutionary process is the right way to do that. And so that's what we do.
Yeah, I was speaking
So I
to
think it makes a big difference.
I was speaking to somebody from EIT Food about a week ago, and one of the things she mentioned was how the use of AI and just sort of Chat GPT has helped so many of the startups. Helped overcome so many of the problems, I suppose kind of beyond just having a personal assistant, it just sort of speeds everything up slightly more. So obviously it's a big deal. I don't know if you know who EIT is, but they kind of help startups in the EU. They're kind of partially funded by the European Commission,
Oh, okay.
and the Horizon Project funding as well. So they are helping thousands of startups and with the use of
Yeah,
AI.
no, it's yeah, even yeah, like I think what you're saying there, I hadn't been for I wasn't familiar myself with the IT, but it sounds like a really needed organization, and we certainly, and I think almost everyone now uses the kind of the AI tools that are available, these kind of language-based AI tools, whether it's to accelerate coding or writing drafts of things like that, it's super valuable. And I think that that potential is what that what we see there is what why we're excited about doing the same for biology, right? Like biology is, you could think of it as kind of a language, and so what those models do, like the Claude or ChatGPT, what they're doing is essentially they're working on sequences of information, and they're predicting what those sequences should be. And that's exactly what a genome is, right? It's a sequence of letters, right, of information. And so the same exact kind of models and algorithms can work at the in this language of biology, just like it can for the language of English or Spanish or whatever. So yeah.
Okay, well, I've got one last question for you, Jeremy, before we wrap up. I mean, obviously, it's very exciting technology, and it's going great guns. So where do you see yourself in 5 years from now? How do you think Triple Bar will be performing, and how do you think you would have kind of changed or kind of impacted on industry?
Yeah, I mean, I think in 5 years, what we see is that a significant number of products like are starting to kind of be on the market, both in terms of medicines and also, well, medicine's not on the market, but like in the clinic, and foods on market that are made using these systems. I think the potential has been there for a long time. And we see ourselves as kind of beneficial to that whole industry, and so we want to be kind of part of all the products that are on that market. We're not a company that's going to take everything to the consumer. We're going to be in the background, kind of doing what we do well for a large number of products. So hopefully, that can start to bring the better health to people, and that's what our goal is.
So are you working mainly with people in the U in Europe at the moment, or do you have you got partners as well in the US?
We have partners in Europe and other parts of the world as well, so Asia and Australia, so it's pretty global, like what we've seen.
Okay. All right. Well, it's been wonderful talking to you, Jeremy. Thank you so much for coming on to the show. And I feel, I mean, I always love it more when I feel like I've learned something at the end. And I can certainly take that away from this conversation. So I
Well,
hope to hear more in the future.
great. Well, yeah, let's check in. It would be great to tell you how things are going as we move along. So thanks a lot for having me. It's been great.